Oh, no, I'm none of those. I'm still a grad student hoping to finish in the near future. Thank you very much for the invitation. Thanks to Michelle. Thanks to Graham for putting me in touch with Michelle. It's a great honor to be here to give this talk. Today's talk concerns not just the hidden order transition of uranium, ruthenium, silicide, but also what we're starting to understand is some of the nature of the heavy fermion materials. As what I'm going to show you, you can see there's going to be some discrepancy between what theory predicts and what so far we are getting in our data. These are my collaborators. As you can see, there's a large number. In particular, the Canadian collaboration has been great with Graham, Travis, and Jim here growing our wonderful crystals. We've grown the pure uranium ruthenium-2-silicon-2, as well as a 1% thorium doped, which we've used for quasi-particle interference, which I'll go through. So my talk will cover the basics of heavy fermions. I will go through Kondo theory very quickly, just so everyone is quickly caught up. Give you a flavor of what spectroscopic STM is, just to see what our instrument is doing. Talk about the Fano lattice, which we believe is the manifestation in the STM of a Kondo lattice. And then move on and show, as we go through the hidden order transition, how the Kondo lattice changed both in real space and in momentum space with this odd phase transition, which has actually been quite elusive for the last 25 years. And finally, I would like to make some connections between the heavy fermions and the hidden order, and finally show you that there is a whole new window that has been opened by using spectroscopic imaging STM to study heavy fermion materials. So if I want to go through a few basic features. When heavy fermions were first discovered, it was phenomenologically known that, well, if you take a specific heat and you extrapolate down to zero temperature and extract a Sommerfeld coefficient, you can interpret that as being some enhanced effect of mass in these materials. But really, it is a phenomenological sense in which we define these things. Of course, you can go on further and say, if I take quantum oscillation measurements, I can also get an effect of mass that way. But originally, it comes out of thermodynamics. These materials also have a common feature where there is really a matrix, essentially a grid or a lattice of magnetic moments coming from either rare earth or actinide compounds. At high temperatures, they tend to be localized magnetic moments. And theory and both experiments tend to seem to consistently say that as you lower the temperature, these magnetic moments melt into the Fermi Sea. So a lot of this melting into the Fermi Sea happens through a Kondo mechanism. Here I'm showing, I'm showing the density of states for an impurity system. If we have a few percent magnetic impurities in a metal, as you lower the temperature, the spin flip scattering turns on, which is what causes, for example, a rise in the resistivity as you go to low temperature. But as you lower the temperature even further, then there is an interaction between the magnetic moment and the conduction electrons, which eventually forms a many-body singlet state. And that manifests itself, as you see in the center here, as what we call the Kondo resonance. This many-body state forms this resonance in the density of states very close to the chemical potential. For an STM to measure this, it was done back in 98. So here we have a surface of gold on which you have cobalt, which acts as a magnetic atom in gold. And the STM doesn't see this sharp resonance. Instead, what it does see is that if you start off, you know, put your tip away from the gold and then move towards the cobalt atom, the flat band, the local density of states measurement, starts developing this asymmetric structure until it's fully formed when you're right on the cobalt atom. And then when you move away again in distance, it flattens out again to the local density of states of the metal. So rather than seeing the sharp Kondo resonance, what you really see is this asymmetric line shape. And the explanation comes from the fact that, well, if you put your tip close to your sample and you have the magnetic atom here and then this is your substrate of metal, there are multiple tunneling channels in which the electrons from the tip can tunnel into the material. And then these multiple channels undergo some type of interference, and the interference is what causes the asymmetric line shape. So this is what we have for a Kondo impurity system, where you have a 2 to 3%. In this case, with an STM, you can come right on top of the impurity and see what's happening. We now move on to the heavy fermion materials, where we no longer have an impurity number of magnetic atoms, but we have a whole lattice of them. We have a matrix. And in that case, what really happens is that, as I said, at high temperature, you have the F states, which are at a particular energy level here, and this is the background conduction band. Through interactions, and I've just stated the Anderson-Hamiltonian here, is that there's a renormalization of this F level to just above the chemical potential through some Kondo mechanism. And then once you're at this stage, then there's an avoided crossing between this level and the background conduction band, which was like this. And so this causes the flattening out of the band. And this flattening out is what generates the heavy bands, because the heaviness is proportional to the curvature here. So you have the dispersion come up, it flattens out, gets to the zone edge, and then jumps back to the zone center, and then starts up again, finally back onto the trajectory of the background conduction band. This is some resistivity data, just to drive it home. These are two materials. One has F electrons. These are the ones contributing to the moments. And this one doesn't. And otherwise, structurally, they're very similar. And as you lower the temperature, here's where you have the spin flip scattering start. And then you get to this high peak where the Kondo resonance really starts to pick up. And then once the Kondo resonance is formed on each of the individual sites, then there's a coherence effect which sets in, where the Kondo resonances start to talk to one another, and then you have the formation of heavy quasiparticles. That's so far what's been consistently known in terms of with theory and experiment for the heavy fermion compounds. This is the beast that we've decided to study, which was grown at McMaster. As you can see, it has a lot of various properties which make it worth studying. First of all, it has a superconducting transition at 1.5 Kelvin. This is the enhanced Sommerfeld coefficient with specific heat. There's an enhanced susceptibility coefficient as well. And depending whether you study this above the hidden order transition or below, you will see different effective masses. You will see 50 above the hidden order transition and 25 below. And these come from either optical studies, some of which were done by Tom many years ago, and also by thermodynamics. And this T star 55 Kelvin that I've stated here is essentially that temperature in which the coherence starts to set in and you have the starting of the formation of heavy quasiparticles. And then there's this hidden order transition, which has been elusive for, you know, the last 25, 30 years, which is accompanied with a bit of an anti-ferromagnetic transition. However, the moments there are very small. They're 0.03 Bohr magnetons. And if you were to do a calculation, that amount of ordering is not sufficient to describe the massive phase transition that happens at 17.5 Kelvin. So this is some specific heat data for uranium, ruthenium, silicon 2. This is this coherence that's starting to set in. And as it sets in, then you have where we come to the hidden order transition. I show this because there's nothing hidden about it. It is very prominent. You can see it in specific heat and thermodynamics. The only thing that's hidden about it is that for the last 25 years, we really haven't been able to find the order parameter. We haven't been able to find what's the broken symmetry in this system. So, a few questions to answer. First of all is, what is the structure of a Kondo lattice? Can we image it? And then once we know that, can you further make a relationship to that, from that to the hidden order transition? And then now that we have all this information, what is happening to the momentum space structure as well as the real space structure? So this is the instrument that I work on. This is the STM head right here. It's about that big. If you zoom out, I'm looking from the probe from the bottom. I'm standing in this big pit, and this is the STM here. And this is the room, and this is the pit I was standing in looking up in this direction, and the STM is right there. Our instrument is set up in a sound room. First of all, there's an outer room, which is a sound room here. So this is the hallway. You walk in, there's a sound room. And then the STM itself is housed inside a separate floating room. This is a 30-ton piece of concrete, which sits on three air springs on this side and three air springs on this side. And when we take data, we float the entire room. And this decouples us from as much mechanical vibration from the outside to the inside. And then once you have that, we have this table. So you see the three pillars here, which all fit with lead. And then they sit on also three more air springs. And then the STM sits inside this Dewar here. So these are a few images from the STM, from just microscopy. All we've done is taken a topograph of these various materials. This is BISCO, Bi-2212. These are the oxychlorides, two high-temperature superconductors, strontium ruthenate-327, which our group has also studied. And finally, this is the material I'm going to show you, uranium, ruthenium-2, silicon-2. But beyond just microscopy, we want to also look at spectroscopy. So here, I'm showing our STM tips on a particular point on the surface, and it gives you a particular spectra. And this spectra is a differential conductance spectra, which ends up being proportional to the local density of states. If I move to some other point, let's say on impurity, this spectra is going to look different. So effectively, I can map out the local density of states, which I'm calling G here, as a function of position and as a function of energy. So this is energy here, this is DIDV, and then I can map it out for this entire field of view. Let's say I choose to do 256 by 256 pixels. So now that I have that information, I want to see what the conductance, what the density of states looks like at a given energy over my field of view. And these are the images that I get. So this is the local density of states at 1.5 millivolts taken over the entire field of view. And then I could do the same thing at a different energy and essentially cycle through. So here I've shown X, Y, and then the energy. I'm going to show you a movie of these particular images later on for our material. There has been, I would say, a great amount of success with spectroscopic imaging STM. We've been able to find the nanoscale disorder in the pseudogap structure in the cuprates, the vortex core structures, and then using the Fourier transform of these conductance maps, these local density of states maps, you can start backing out the band structure. You can see this checkerboard pattern which starts coming out from the extinction of Vogel-Yubov quasi-particles as you hit the pseudogap energy scale. And then if you zoom in even further, then you see there's these fine structures, which actually ends up being signs of nemeticity. And then we have a paper coming out soon showing that there's a pneumatic structure in the cuprates in the pseudogap energy scale. And finally, there's also nanoscale disorder in the electron lattice interactions in the cuprates. There's also been studies of the ruthenates, where we've successfully there's been some clues, but by taking this Fourier transform methods of the local density of states, we've been able to back out the band structures of strontium ruthenate 327. And recently, there's been studies of the iron nictides, where they've discovered the pneumatic, essentially there's a nemeticity in this material, where these are, once again, the Fourier transform of the density of states. And across some of these boundaries, you can see that these rotate by 90 degrees. And from these, you can back out the band structure, which is consistent with ARPEDS. So getting to the heart of what we're studying. This is our crystal. You have the silicon atoms, and then you, on this layer, and then one layer down in the middle, you have the uranium. We believe in the pure sample, where we haven't doped with any thorium, we end up on the silicon surface. And this is a topograph of the silicon surface. If you dope with 1% thorium, we believe that you can bias it to cleave on the uranium sample. And then these black dots here are the dopants of thorium. So we're going to start in the silicon sample, on the silicon surface, and see the results there. So initially, we didn't know. It came after the thorium doping. When we did the thorium, and we said, well, if you can see the thoriums, and we know what concentration we did dope them in, we got this new surface count of the black spots, and they were consistent with the 1% thorium. And thorium substitutes on the uranium site. They're cleaved in ultra-high vacuum in situ. So this is at 19 Kelvin. We're above the hidden order transition. And this is just a topograph showing the silicon atoms in the bright spots. And if I were just to take spectra over the entire field of view and then take an average, this is what I get. So remember that this was the Fano line shift that I spoke about, that you get from putting magnetic atoms on top of a gold substrate. And I want for you to pay attention to the parameters involved in this. There's this epsilon naught, which is the position of the condor resonance. So the condor resonance is what is one of these channels that you can tunnel into. You have the width of the condor resonance, gamma. And then you have this parameter here, which tells you how much you're coupling to the magnetic, to the condor resonance, versus how much you're coupling to the background band. So for example, if this is higher, it means you're coupling much more to the condor resonance, the magnetic states. And if it's much lower, you're coupling to the background. So you can see that it makes a beautiful fit to the data, just averaged over this entire field of view. Now, because we have the ability to do spatial resolution, I want to plot out versus position what is the energy location of the condor resonance, its width, and this coupling parameter. And here they are. The first striking thing to note is that each of these parameters follows the symmetry of the lattice. So for example, in this case, the energy of the Condor resonance changes as you move from the silicon site to above the uranium site and then back onto the silicon site, and the same thing for its width as well as this coupling parameter. We can take a slightly closer look and make sure that this is really consistent with what we think is happening. So once again, here's the topography. The bright spots are the silicon. And in yellow here, these dots, I have the positions of the uranium atoms one layer down. So follow where these dots are, and we'll go through an explanation of what's happening. So here is the position of the Condor resonance. And on these black dots, it's where they're highest. Not on the silicon atoms, but on the uranium atoms. If you look at, once again, on the uranium atoms, you see that this width is the smallest. That means the Condor resonance seems sharpest where the uranium atoms are. And if you look at this coupling parameter, once again, the coupling to the magnetic, the Condor resonance state, is actually highest at the uranium sites and much lower on the silicon sites. So we believe that this is actually the first spatial visualization of a Condor lattice. Individual Condor resonances at each of the uranium sites is now visualized in this way with spectroscopic imaging STM. So this starts off us on where we are in the heavy fermion state. And amazingly, theory says, yes, this is what you should get. And it's been done with large-end expansions giving you mean field theory predictions. There's a slight difference in this gap, which I'll get to later. And also in dynamic mean field theory, which also says on the uranium atoms, you should get this Fano line shape. So now that we've established what we have above the hidden order transition, we want to start descending into the hidden order and seeing what we have there. So what I'm showing you now is the average density of states at 19 Kelvin averaged over a field of view. And we're going to start lowering the temperature. And as we lower, we're going to start seeing a change in the alteration in the density of states. So here's the hidden order phase transition temperature. And as we go down, you see the formation. There's something being dug out of the density of states as we move down into the hidden order transition. If I fit everything else except where that gap region lies, I see that it still fits the Fano line shape quite well. I have that, so I'm going to subtract that off, and then you can see your gap structure by itself. And you can see, really, at 17.5 Kelvin, it is what you are starting to see signatures of that phase transition happening, which might seem actually a little strange because STM is a surface probe, and yet we seem to be on par exactly with bulk thermodynamics says the phase transition should be happening. And once again, if you were to measure the size of the gap that we do with STM and compare it, for example, with thermodynamics, thermodynamics says that the gap should be about 11 millivolts. We measure 12 millivolts. You can say there's a few millivolts of play there. Once again, optical conductivity done a long time ago seems to be consistent with all of these results. So here's where the strange thing comes in. This the large N expansion says, look, if you have a Condor impurity, you should have the Fano resonance, which we knew. But if you have a lattice, a Condor lattice, then you should have this gap structure in there as well. And yet, supposedly at 19 Kelvin, when we are a heavy fermion already, we see no gap structure. It's only once we move through the hidden order transition that the gap evolves. So that point I'm going to come back to, because from our quasi-particle interference data, there seems to be some idea of what's actually happening as you move through the hidden order transition. So once again, this is our uranium surface, and these are our thorium dopants. This surface, when you take the density of states, when you take one of these conductance curves, it shows something different. It doesn't show the Fano line shape, but it shows something different. And this is the density of states average over a field of view at 19 Kelvin, once again, above the hidden order transition. Once again, we're going to start descending and seeing what happens. So even on this surface, the signatures of the hidden order show themselves very, very clearly. Once again, you have this gap structure which forms. And if you subtract out the 19 Kelvin data, then you see that really much at 16 Kelvin is where the phase transition starts to happen. And that's actually consistent, because when you thorium dope, there's a suppression of the hidden order transition. So a slight suppression in temperature where it sets in is to be expected. So if you measure this gap now at 1.9 Kelvin and compare it once again with thermodynamics of the doped sample, you see that they expect this time in the gaps given in Kelvin, a gap of 49 Kelvin, and we see a gap of about 50 Kelvin. So the spectroscopic gap so far has shown to be completely consistent with the bulk thermodynamic gap. So the next part of this will deal with quasi-particle interference. That is essentially the interference of incoming electrons scattering off some impurities, some defects in the crystal, and then interfering with the outgoing waves. And this is essentially what I've shown here. You have some electronic state coming in from within the band structure. It carries a particular K pertinent to that band structure. It scatters out to another K vector pertinent to that band structure. And then what you see is an interference pattern which is proportional to, which carries a modulation of Q, essentially the difference between the initial, the outgoing and the incoming one. So we will see modulations in space of size Q. And essentially here's one snapshot of it. You can see modulations in the local density states due to the scattering effect. So I'm going to show you a movie now. This is a large field of view, 55 nanometers by 55 nanometers. I'm going to cycle through energies. And you should observe essentially the modulations in the local density states caused by the scattering and interference effect. Let's see if I can get this going. So I'm going to go back again. So in this portion where it's rather boring, you can see that there isn't really anything happening in this field of view here. And then we start approaching the gap, which opened up at the hidden order transition. And then a lot of action starts to happen. So these are, once again, modulations of size Q. Q being the difference of the incoming and outgoing wave vectors of the interference. We really want to know what those Q vectors are. And the best way to do that is to take a Fourier transform. And the Fourier transform then really puts us into a momentum transfer space. So I'm going to show you exactly the same thing, except I've just taken the Fourier transform of it. There's been some data processing, obviously. There they start. They move in, there's a rotation, and then once again, they move back in. So let's go backwards. Once again, rather boring here, and then you approach where the gap opens, and then you have these dispersions, which start moving out in this direction, and then they rotate, and you see the dominant ones end up being on the diagonals. And then they move out. So this is giving us a huge amount of information on the momentum space structure of this material. So let me give you a quick recap. Remember that the Anderson lattice model said that you had a background band structure like this because of the avoided crossing of the renormalized F level, because of the Kondo mechanism. The band splits, goes heavy here, jumps across the zone, is heavy, and then comes back up and meets back at where the band used to be. So we're going to take some line cuts. Essentially, I'm going to look at the most dominant or the brightest spots in this direction and the brightest spots in this direction as a function of energy. And I'm going to do this for all the temperatures starting above the hidden order transition and then moving down into the hidden order transition and then well below. So here is above the hidden order transition. This is essentially following these bright peaks in one direction this way and then one direction the other way. And you can see above the hidden order transition, essentially, it's some very boring band. It's pretty flat, and nothing is happening. So this is the energy, and this is momentum transfer space, which we believe is actually very closely linked to the actual K space through some simple relation. So as I lower the temperature, you start seeing a little bit of perturbation in the bands. And then you see something really start to happen. And then finally, at 6 Kelvin, you see a splitting of that band like this and then like this, where initially it was just a straight line. And you can see that there's a slight difference between in the directions. Whether you're in this direction or this direction, the splitting is slightly different. So let me put it all side by side. and to show you the temperature dependence. We started up here above the hidden order transition. If you were to take the effect of mass here, in both directions, you would see it's about 9 times the bare electron mass. And this is where we're inconsistent with thermodynamics, because they say you should see an effect of mass of 50. So whether we're not coupling to the entire electronic structure or whether there's something wrong in thermodynamics is yet to be determined. Well, for thermodynamics, they probably say we're wrong. So we'll have to come up with an explanation. And so once again, you move down in temperature and you see the splitting of the band. And here, if you measure the curvatures, you can extract in one direction, in this direction, an effective mass of 17, and in this direction, 50. And if you take some geometric average there, then you see this, the mass is about 30, which is then, in that case, below the hidden order transition, is consistent with thermodynamics. So just to show you side by side, here is what mean field theory Kondo lattice model predicts, and this is what we have. So far, everything has told us that this gapping of the Fermi surface, this transition into the hidden order, is really some movement into a heavy fermion state. Even though you should have started off with a heavy fermion, once you hit the hidden order transition, you get the splitting of the bands, you get everything that's typical that should happen for a heavy fermion formation, except the fact that it's a phase transition, whereas a heavy fermion formation is only a crossover. So there's still some symmetry breaking here that we haven't discovered. So to summarize, we've seen a Fano lattice above the hidden order transition, some signature of a heavy fermion. Even though if it doesn't have that gap that it should, we do see a Fano resonance. And it looks like it's a localized Kondo resonance at each of the uranium atoms. And then only when you move down through the hidden order transition do you see the opening of the gap in the Fano line shape, as you would expect from mean field theory, the Kondo model. Then if you look at the quasi-particle interference and back out the band structure, that also tells you moving through the hidden order transition gives you another Kondo-like splitting. And finally, just to say that we are consistent, our effective masses and our effective masses are in agreement with both ARPES and thermodynamics. So it really looks like what's happening in the hidden order is that you start off with a Fano lattice, you have localized Kondo resonances, and then there's alterations in that local structure in space, but at the same time, you're changing the momentum space structure as hidden order sensing. So just to conclude, spectroscopic imaging STM really opens up a whole new realm into studying heavy fermion materials. First of all, we can see the Kondo lattice, and now we can also study it. You know, you put in impurities and see how the Kondo lattice responds to that. Furthermore, within the quasi-particle interference, all that interference, there is the symmetry of the bands. You saw the band structure in this direction was different than in that direction. And furthermore, once we lower the temperature far enough, you'll start seeing superconductivity. And these are superconductivities forming out of a heavy quasi-particle. So now you have heavy Bogoliubov quasi-particles coming out of these systems with potentially F-wave symmetry. And I believe really that within our data lies the hidden order parameter itself. It's just a matter of projecting it onto the right basis to get it out there. And with that, I conclude. Thank you. Sorry if I went over a little bit.